we're doing the best we can to make the last great race uber hygienic.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about what else? The Iditarod, which is perhaps the only major sporting event still happening anywhere. Major to us, anyway. I'm your host, Casey Grove, and before we go off social distancing and self-isolating ourselves by mushing away into the Alaska wilderness, how about a word from our sponsor?
Support for Iditapod 2020 comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
The Iditapod is a production of Alaska Public Media, and yeah, hanging out by yourself with a pack of dogs is starting to seem better and better every day. It is today, Friday the 13th. There's plenty of scary news out there to worry about, even for the least superstitious among us. That was Iditarod CEO Rob Urbach at the start of the pod. We'll have more from him coming up, plus a story from the trail about Musher's first reactions to hearing about impacts elsewhere from the coronavirus. We're also going to hear from John Schandelmeyer about how the heck he got into this race, and we'll also have a listener question, an answer to that question, and a dog profile. Hint, it's a dog we talked about a little bit last year at the finish. First, how about a race update? Front of the pack Iditarod sled dog team started arriving in Ruby today. Again, it's Friday the 13th. And they were led in by Jesse Royer, who, by arriving first to the Yukon River, wins a five-course meal. More on that in a minute. Royer checked into Ruby under pale moonlight, I am told, officially at 6:37 a.m. She arrived with a full team carrying one dog in the sled. According to a race veterinarian, however, K-Dog in the sled there had a sore shoulder, and Royer had plans to drop him in Ruby. When asked how long she'll stay in Ruby, Royer said she wasn't quite sure.
You can do your eight.
I haven't decided. I'll declare it, but I may not take it.
I'll just mark it, eh?
Royer did mention that she'll stay for a while anyway, whether or not she takes her 8-hour layover. That's the one that is required somewhere along the Yukon River. A little over half an hour behind Royer was Thomas Warner, who checked in just 1 minute ahead of Aaron Burmeister after the two had raced each other into Ruby. About an hour or more behind Royer was reigning Yukon Quest champ Brent Sass, followed roughly another hour later by Richie Deal, Your Life Seth Olsom, and Ryan Reddington, all very close together, within just a couple minutes of each other. As I'm recording this, there are a whole lot more people into Ruby this morning. Back to Royer, while it's still way too early to start making any predictions, I'm just going to throw this out there. What if this is the year that a woman is again crowned champion of the Iditarod? It's been 30 years since Susan Butcher won it, and a couple years before that, of course, Butcher's three straight wins and one by Libby Riddles inspired the saying, Alaska, where men are men and women win the Iditarod. Something my mom repeated to me much as a child. Royer took third place last year, her highest finish in the Iditarod, which she is running this year for the 18th time. Royer's dog team is looking great again this year. She's also led the way into at least a couple of checkpoints, of course, Ruby today being one of them. She told our guys on the trail earlier in the race that was something she'd actually never done before this year, arriving first in a checkpoint. Go figure. Mushing out in front of the Iditarod, and like I said earlier, by making it to Ruby and the Yukon River in first place, Royer won a five-course meal. That is from the Lakefront Anchorage Hotel, prepared by their executive chef, Roberto Cedro. And here is what Chef Cedro has on the menu for Royer. Lobster bisque served with rosemary crostini, blackened spot prawns, roasted pear, and aged gorgonzola tossed in an arugula salad with sherry vinaigrette. Seared marinated duck breast wrapped in bacon and drizzled with orange glaze, served on a bed of lightly sautéed bok choy. Espresso-rubbed bone-in ribeye steak with bourbon sauce, seared and flambéed, paired with roasted mashed celery root and sautéed baby carrots. And for dessert, homemade wild berry cheesecake garnished with chocolate-dipped strawberries. There's also what they describe as an after-dinner mint, quote-unquote, of $3,500 in neatly stacked $1 bills. I've seen it before. It is indeed neatly stacked, along with a bottle of Dom Pérignon champagne, all of which is served on a commemorative gold pan. When I first read their press release about this, I thought they meant like a platter made out of gold. Of course, a gold pan, a pretty recognizable feature in Alaska. A plate made out of gold, that would be excessive, but I suppose the whole meal is a little excessive, so whatever. What's not excessive, but still disappointing, and here's where we reluctantly turn away from the fun stuff for a little bit, to the coronavirus impacts on the race, that is that the Iditarod has canceled some pretty big gatherings at the race finish in Nome. That big announcement we were waiting for yesterday, which is not surprising, still disappointing, is that the Iditarod is following health officials' guidance aimed at preventing the spread of coronavirus and not holding any more public gatherings around the race. For Nome, that means they've canceled the Meet the Mushers event that was scheduled for March 21st and actually the whole awards banquet that was set for March 22nd. In a written statement, the Iditarod referred to those events as having been postponed, but at this point, we haven't heard any indication of when in the future they might actually be held. I say that they're not holding any more public gatherings around the race because, of course, there was this little thing called the ceremonial start in Anchorage last Saturday, which is one of the largest public gatherings that ever happens in Alaska. When one of our reporters on the trail, KNOM's Ben Matheson, asked Fairbanks musher Riley Dyke if he was taking any extra precautions out on the trail because of worry about the virus, Riley just kind of laughed.
The ceremonial start kind of threw any precautions out the window when you have thousands of people giving you high fives right off the bat from the starting line and handing you, you know, beers and things like that while you're mushing through the streets of Anchorage. There's more contact there than you could get even on a cruise ship, I bet.
And I should say, we haven't heard anything about the ceremonial start spreading the virus. It just seems like so much has changed in the last week, less than a week, really, since all those people gathered together to celebrate the race start. And it's worth mentioning the Iditarod statement about those cancellations or postponements or whatever you want to call them, an all-around bummer, I would say, came just a little while before Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy announced last night that Alaska had its first positive test for coronavirus. According to what we've been told by state officials, the patient was from another country, flew into the state on a cargo plane, he was experiencing coronavirus symptoms and was treated at a local emergency room. I'm not going to get into the whole story here, but there's more about that at alaskapublic.org, along with all of our race coverage, including lots of dog photos if you need further distractions. Among those who've been distracted and not following all the coronavirus news, the Iditarod mushers. They've been out there traveling mostly alone in the wilderness since Sunday, so many were just recently learning about the global, national, and local developments, almost by accident, if at all, from people in checkpoints, including hearing about it from our reporter on the trail, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes. Here is a story about that from Zach.
Aaron Burmeister blew through the Cripple checkpoint, stopping just long enough to grab supplies and straw. He'd not yet heard news from the last few hours that the Iditarod has decided to postpone its annual awards banquet in his hometown of Nome.
What do you think about the banquet being canceled?
What banquet?
The Nome banquet.
I didn't hear it. That's the first.
Oh.
It's kind of funny.
Over the coronavirus stuff.
I'd be surprised, but that was not the time to worry about it.
A few seconds later, Burmeister pulled his snow hook and continued racing north towards Ruby.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. You have a safe run, Aaron.
Mushers and Cripple were not concerned about getting sick from the virus, and there's little to no evidence it can be transmitted to pets or dog teams from humans. Kelly Maxner is a healthcare professional, a pediatric dentist.
Am I worried about coronavirus out here? No, I'm not.
Mushing, after all, is sort of the ultimate form of social distancing. Michelle Phillips says it's actually a relief not to be bombarded with news about the global pandemic.
It's been like, quite pleasant not hearing about it, yeah.
Yeah, is it on your mind at all, or is it?
No, no. There's, you know, just take care of your body and whatever.
Phillips and Maxner both stressed basic measures like hand washing and good hygiene. Even though they say they're not worried, mushers are surprised, finding out sporadically about all the enormous steps being taken to contain the illness. Here was Brent Sass's reaction to finding out the NBA suspended its season.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, f***.
He says he didn't know the virus has become such a major issue.
Oh, it's and for real, then. It's you know, at least people are thinking it's for real. Canceling NBA is pretty
pretty hardcore.
Sass says he's normally pretty unplugged and doesn't spend a lot of time following news events. And Iditarod is no different.
Glad I'm out here in the middle of nowhere.
But mushers who came to the race from overseas are suddenly having to deal with a whole new set of logistical challenges on top of the race itself. Thomas Warner was on the trail when he first learned about new U.S. travel restrictions affecting 26 countries, including Denmark, where he lives.
It was a snow machine to set it. And I also got this inreach, I got a message. I have to leave, my wife said.
Werner's wife is in Alaska and was set to be on hand for his finish in Nome. But now there's a risk she could get stuck if flights stop flying between the U.S. and Europe. So she's rebooking to get back to Norway. For his part, Werner will keep racing. But that'll mean even more challenges trying to get himself and 14 sled dogs back home afterwards.
I think I will go to Nome first, but it's going to be a problem because it's really expensive because you have to have four people and each person has to have four dogs. So you have to find four people that can, you know, go to Norway and back and pay the tickets and everything. So that's going to be expensive.
Not everyone is choosing to continue, though. Veteran Jeremy Keller, who had been running in the back of the pack, scratched in Nikolai. According to a release from the Iditarod Trail Committee, he did so due to current events and wanting to be home with his friends and family during this stressful time. Rather than flying out, Keller is mushing his team back down the trail to Willow. At the Cripple Creek checkpoint on the Iditarod Trail, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
So that's the coronavirus situation out on the trail, but what about the Iditarod's response back at home? Here to talk about that is Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon. Welcome back, Tegan.
Hey, Casey. Thanks.
I feel like we're about to have a much more serious conversation than we have in these previous Iditapod episodes.
Yeah, I think so. It felt like in the beginning of the race, we were just going to be talking about deep snow on the Iditapod a lot. And now I think we're going to be talking about coronavirus a lot.
Yeah, it's getting a lot less jokey here.
Yeah.
So, Tegan, you talked with the Iditarod CEO, Rob Urbach, today, and he's actually at the helm for his first race this year. What did he have to say about all of this?
Yeah, I talked to Rob this morning. He talked about the events that are being canceled in Nome, including the Iditarod Finishers Banquet, which is at the end of the race and all of the mushers go and get awards. There's also a musher meet and greet that has been canceled. And we talked about the city of Nome canceling its festivities too, including an annual basketball tournament that draws hundreds of visitors to the city. Urbach and I also talked about what's being done on the trail to try to prevent the spread of germs. And he said that they have been increasing sanitation along the trail at the checkpoints. Like they have more wipes, he said, and more disinfectant sprays. He also said that they are limiting the race staff to what he called, you know, key personnel. So some volunteers may be flying home or just not coming to Nome at all. Here's Urbach.
We're doing the best we can to make last great race uber hygienic.
I also asked him if he had any concerns about the Iditarod spreading the coronavirus in rural Alaska, because it's not just the mushers that are going across the state. There's also the race fans, the veterinarians, the volunteers. Here's what he said about that.
Is it completely riskless? No, nothing is riskless, but I think our risk is pretty minimal. And, you know, we are clearly fully aware of the dynamic and doing everything we can to you know, lessen the impact to our communities.
And just to add there, I asked Urbach if there had been any conversations at this point about canceling the race, given all of the other major sporting events that are having their seasons canceled or postponed. And he said, no, there's been no conversations about stopping the Iditarod.
Yeah, we've been talking about this a little bit. It's like one of the only, maybe like the only major sporting event. I mean, it's major to us that's even going on right now, which, you know, I wonder if that just puts more attention on the Iditarod. And I'm kind of interested to see if maybe more people start tuning in to the race this year just because there isn't other stuff going on. Also, Tegan, there's sort of this oddly ironic thing about the idea, even if they say it's unlikely to happen, that the Iditarod might spread coronavirus from elsewhere to Nome or to places in rural Alaska in general. There's the connection the race has, of course, to the 1925 serum run in which dog teams relayed a life-saving diphtheria serum to Nome. But how are the communities feeling about the race this year? Are other people worried?
Yeah, we're hearing that there is quite a bit of concern along the trail. You know, I think we have to remember, and maybe a lot of people know already, we talk about this race going through vast stretches of remote wilderness, but it's also going through, you know, about 20 checkpoints along the trail, and many of them are villages, communities with people where they live, where they work. And we talked to some of those people today, and they said, yes, they are concerned about more people passing through with the Iditarod and the possibility that they're carrying the virus. One person we talked to was Bobby Bolin, the superintendent at the Bering Strait School District. That school district covers communities including Unalakleet and Shaktulik. And Bolin said that they are taking extra precautions to hopefully prevent the spread of the virus. One big thing is that they're closing schools to race officials, volunteers, reporters, and that's a pretty serious deal. A lot of people rely on the schools throughout the trail. I know I did. I think Zach might too. It's where people sleep. It's where they eat. It's where they use the internet to file their stories. Here's what Superintendent Bolin had to say.
Well, I think communities, I know in Unalakleet, the city was discussing how to handle a checkpoint since that's the first time they reached the coast. I think there's a lot of caution. I think people are moderately concerned that, that the virus could be a carrier on people coming through town, and that large groups, obviously meeting mushers and things like that are going to be challenging areas and hard to control in open spaces. So I think it's a little bit higher concern this year.
So in the very least, we're talking about a much more subdued finish to the Iditarod, but also maybe just more difficult for everybody out there with the facilities that they're used to using being closed down and people, you know, very rightfully so concerned about the spread of this virus.
Yeah, the Iditarod chief executive talked about that a little bit. Rob Urbach, he said, you know, you're not going to see a Nome finish line like you have traditionally. We're not expecting to see fans lining a snowy front street. It's going to be a little more quiet.
One thing I was thinking about this morning was that if there aren't going to be fans there cheering at the finish line, maybe something that we with our radio producing software can do is like take all the different fans recording themselves cheering for whoever wins and like mix that all together so it sounds like a crowd or something. You know, I mean,
that would be kind of fun.
Maybe that's a service that we can provide, you know.
Yeah. Send recordings of yourself cheering, Iditapod listeners.
We're expecting that finish, of course, sometime next week. Stay tuned to the Iditapod for that. Tegan, thank you for the service that you've been providing covering oil and gas, health, the Iditarod, coronavirus, mother to Bagel the dog, and everything else. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Casey. Thanks for your work.
So the Iditarod making some adjustments for health-related concerns. And here's where I make an awkward segue and a hard turn away from the coronavirus. Another health-related adjustment was John Schandelmeyer even running this race at all. Technically, still an Iditarod rookie, though he has been known to win the Yukon Quest, at least back in the day. Iditarod sled dog teams were already on the trail Sunday when Schandelmeyer decided to run the race to Nome. His wife, Zoya Denier, was late to the start in Willow when he got a call from his daughter saying that Denier was at the hospital. We're not sure why, but it sounds like she's on the mend. But we caught up with Schandelmeyer recently out on the trail, and he says that over the phone on Sunday, he and Denier debated that last second switch.
You know, we decided that I should go ahead and go if I could, so we just started scrounging gear. So I got gear that belongs to everybody. I have no idea even who I borrowed everything from.
Race Marshal Mark Nordman quickly gave Schandelmeyer the go-ahead, but he still needed to decide whether to set off on the 1,000-mile race.
I just kind of set myself. I said, you know, the only thing I'm lacking right now is a balaclava, and if I get that in time, I'll go ahead and go.
He got the gear and was soon racing his first Iditarod in 27 years. Schandelmeyer reached Takotna Wednesday and settled in for his 24-hour break. He's spoken on the phone once with Denier, who is now home from the hospital.
Everybody's focus is their whole winter on dogs and getting ready for racing or whatever race you're going to run, whether it be the Iditarod or the Quest or whatever. And I have, you know, we had our food drops out, everything, spent a lot of money getting ready for the race and a lot of time. And, you know, it's our life. It's not like this is just an extra little race we're going to run. This is, you know, is what we do.
Schandelmeyer has worked with dogs his entire life and is a two-time champion of the Yukon Quest. He entered the Iditarod once in 1993 in scratch, so like I said, still technically a rookie. He and Denier now live in Paxson and run a sled dog rescue and rehabilitation kennel. All but three dogs are rookies, according to Schandelmeyer, and haven't been on a camping trip before. Thanks to a six-year break since he last raced, Schandelmeyer says he and the dogs both are learning on the fly.
Remembering how to get picky dogs to eat and stuff which you don't have to do in the yard, you know, and how my care should be done to me, for me, on the trail so I can adequately take care of dogs. That, you know, just a lot of the small details. If you were to ask me when I'm sitting at home, I could probably give you a lot of answers, which may not be right when you come out here.
Schandelmeyer left Takotna Thursday night, mushed on to Ophir, and is on his way to the Cripple Creek checkpoint as of this recording, going about 8.5 miles per hour. I saw 9 miles per hour at one point with 13 dogs, so not doing too bad at all. Okay, continuing on with things not related to the coronavirus, here is a four-year-old kid asking a cute four-year-old kid question.
My name is Townsend from Ohio, and I want to know why the puppies wear booties.
Hi, Towns. This is Zach. Why do the dogs wear booties? Great question. Ushers put booties on their dogs because when they're running over snow and ice, the snow crystals can kind of accumulate and start to build up in their paws, or if there's certain kinds of snow conditions, it can rub and be kind of rough and even cut the dog's paws. So when dogs are running this much in such cold weather, they wear the booties to protect their feet, kind of like you or I wear socks or maybe even shoes when we're running outside on sand or dirt or gravel. Thanks for your question.
Thank you, Zachariah Hughes, for that answer. Thank you, Towns, for the question, and thanks for listening. How about a cute kid question followed by a cute dog? Yes? Okay. Today's dog profile is about Morrow, one of my personal favorites. Morrow led her team and her musher, Pete Kaiser, to victory in last year's Iditarod. And so she was Kaiser's Golden Harness dog, that award being presented to the most outstanding dog on the winning team. Morrow is 8 years old, light-colored, kind of golden, I would say, so the golden harness looks really nice on her. That's the best description I can think of. There are pictures out there on the internet of Morrow at the finish line in Nome last year looking totally pleased with herself, wearing that wreath of flowers, the golden harness. And of course, we have the dog profiles posted at alaskapublic.org. Did I mention that's a good distraction from the coronavirus? Anyway, here's Kaiser at the ceremonial start in downtown Anchorage on Saturday describing Morrow.
This is her 7th Iditarod in a row. She's been in the team since she was 2. And she's kind of a slow maturing dog. As a young dog, she kind of wasn't as good as she is now. And so she's kind of built up this confidence as she's gotten older and older, and wasn't much of a leader at a younger age too. And now she's finished. I think she's been in lead in the last 3 Iditarods in a row going into Nome. So she kind of steps it up at the end. She hasn't been in lead one time this whole year in training. Doesn't really care to lead in training a whole lot, but she kind of understands when the pressure's on, and I wouldn't be surprised if she's in lead again going up the coast. So she's a pretty cool special dog.
Did you know since she was a puppy that she was a special dog?
I knew she had a lot of potential for sure, but like I said, she was a little bit of a late bloomer and took some more time to groom her than other dogs, but she sure has blossomed into a cool dog, and she has funny personality quirks, and she's just an interesting dog. But it's fun to travel down the trail with her again.
And it's been fun to travel down the trail with all of you Iditapod listeners. With a lot of concern and anxiety out there in the world, self-isolating and such going on, I hope that you're finding the Iditapod to be a pleasant distraction. On that note, yet another shameless plug. If you need more distraction, you can go back and listen to past episodes of the Iditapod. This season, last season, the season before, if you want to. They're all out there on iTunes, Spotify, and pretty much everywhere else you get your podcasts. That's something I talked about in a past episode. I kind of hate saying podcasts, where you find your podcasts. It just seems silly to me. Like, you're here, you found the podcast. Okay. Anyway, keep in touch, and I'm not kidding about that cheering thing. Like, with our listener questions, maybe bust out your voice memo app, tell us who and where you are, and when somebody wins the race eventually, do some hooting and hollering, some clapping, however else you cheer, send us that clip. I am definitely down to mix all of those together, maybe make it sound like there really was a crowd at the finish, if not in person, virtually anyway. Okay, our theme music, it's by the band Sassafras. I'm your host, Casey Grove, and until next time, happy trails.